intersectionality also brings us together.
How can we learn from each other? How can we improve this? How can we fight and make sure that we don't face these issues in 10 years' time, 5 years' time, 30 years' time?
You can't fight the women you're fighting with.
You can't carry all the weight of the world alone, and not all the time. It's unrealistic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Memory in Motion podcast. I'm your host, Anna Engel. On today's episode, we have two members of the Politics for Her European Hub joining me today: Eileen, who is the co-director of Politics for Her Europe, and Meher, who is the co-head of communications. We talk about intersectionality, sisterhood, creativity, and more. This is also your reminder that if you're interested in joining us remotely for the Memory in Motion conference, August 6th through 9th, you can still register online at the link in the description. Please enjoy.
So, hello everyone. I'm Eileen. I'm co-director of Politics for Her Europe Hub, and we're part of an international NGO with an intersectional feminist digital platform led by a global movement of young women. We advocate for the exclusive participation of young women and girls in politics, and the Europe Hub specifically looks at expanding women's rights and advocating for women's rights in Europe as a whole, and also advocating for active participation of women in political spaces. And so we're a 27 member group with girls, women from over 17 different countries. So we have quite a big group, and we're a nice mix. And with us today is our co-head of communications, Mihar. I don't know if you want to introduce a little bit about the work that the comms team do specifically.
Yes, thanks for the introduction, Eileen. I'm really happy to be here with you guys. My name is Meher and I'm from Pakistan. Right now I'm based in Belgium, so I'm doing my master's in conflict and development, and I had a very long history to get into international relations and politics. And I joined Politics for Her Europe a year ago, more than a year ago, and I just started as a member in the communications team. And now I'm co-heading the team with our other co-head, Monica. And together we do a bunch of things. We work together as a team with, I think, three, four other people to manage their social media, design Instagram and LinkedIn posts that really amplify the message that Politics for Her holds, and we try to use visual storytelling to get our message across to young women, really express our feminist views, also criticize some events that occur across Europe that are clearly a violation of women's rights. For example, abortion access in some countries in Europe. And we also work on publishing policy statements, so designing the covers, again, getting the message across. We also help out sometimes with the podcast team to get their podcast out. So our work is basically getting the message across because the team works really, really hard. They put in a lot of effort to do whatever they do, and together we help the whole team to basically get the message reach the broader audience.
And we're
That's
extremely
amazing.
grateful for everything that
You.
you do in return.
Yes, it's a teamwork. Like Eileen said, we're a mix of really passionate young women, and we're all from very different countries and parts of Europe. And it's very intersectional, and that's what I love about it. For me, I feel like because I'm from Pakistan, and there's sometimes in Europe there are some barriers to be in some organizations that you have to be European or be a national. So for me to have this platform, it's really a really amazing thing to have the space to and be part of something. So yeah.
That sounds like amazing work that you guys do.
Yeah. Well,
Shoot.
we hope so. Yeah.
Thanks.
But yeah, no, it's really touching to hear Mahar say that, because it really is the heart of politics for her, the intersectionality, not only in our work but also within our team. We really want to have everyone's opinion and voice heard, and especially when we're talking about different topics, especially regarding the topics in the Memory in Motion conference, for example. You know, it's who is missing from the conversation, and so we really try and amplify those voices. And so for us, that is really the center of our work, and it's such a important and often like a sort of dismissed part of advocacy work, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak from the American perspective of like intersectionality exists when it's beneficial, but for the most part, it doesn't. And I have so many like things firing off in my head that I have to like tell my brain to calm down. How did you guys get into doing this kind of work? Like, what led you to being where you are today?
So, I guess I have always been, since I can remember, I have been a very passionate feminist since a young age. I think one of the first big cases I remember that really brought me to the cause was an abortion case where, due to restrictive abortion laws in Ireland, a woman unfortunately passed away. And I just remember feeling the anger and the just the at the sense of injustice that this thing happened. And so since then, I've really have been developing my feminist activism. And throughout my university studies, I studied law and human rights through in my bachelor's and my master's. And I've incorporated feminist legal theory and intersectional studies and gender studies really into my work. And then as a young person, I didn't really know where to channel my energy or in what space, because as Mahar mentioned, it's often difficult to know where to go when you have a voice, but you feel maybe that, I don't know, when you're alone, it's more difficult to say something or that it may have even have an impact. And then I saw the work that Politics for Her was doing, and so they were recruiting, and so I applied, and yeah, here I am. But yeah, no, yeah.
It's always the online application, and then it changes everything.
Yeah, like that you're just one application away from getting that job. And being in the organization, and I don't know, just apply. It was pretty much the same for me. Growing up in Pakistan, you know, women's rights are not very, like, yeah, women are just not respected in society at large. There's a lot of patriarchy, and I used to hear a lot of stories about gender-based violence, particularly domestic violence. And I used to ask my mom, like, I was so young, like I think I was maybe 9 or 10 years old, and I used to ask my mom, like, why is this happening to them? Why aren't they going to the police? Why isn't the law protecting them? I had so many questions. But of course, at that age, you know, you don't have the answer to everything. And as time passed, I always knew I wanted to be in politics and international relations, because I was also very big climate advocate. At like 16 years old, I used to give my mom those tote bags so she wouldn't use plastic bags for groceries and stuff. But life had different had a different path for me, and I actually ended up going to journalism school for 2 years. And even then, I was still, you know, making news stories about women's rights, climate change. And eventually, I was like, okay, no, I want to go into international relations. I want to go into politics, and that's what I started university all over again. And then eventually, like, I was following a lot of organizations, and I saw Politics for Her Europe, and I felt this connect with the organization, and I was seeing even our founders' videos, and I was like, okay, this is really inspiring. I feel like I can be part of something, and yeah, I've been with them since then, since last January, so it's been really amazing.
Awesome. I'm like jealous that you guys have this organization, because do we have it in America, or is it there? I saw that there's four hubs. There's Global, SWANA, Asia, and Europe. So can you
I
kind of
think you
like,
would fall under global.
okay. Yeah, could you like explain the different hubs a little bit for the people who are joining us from the different places where they might be able to have access to it?
Yeah, no, definitely. So as we mentioned, we have the Europe Hub, which focuses specifically on the European region. And then we have the Africa Hub, which focuses on women's rights issues in Africa. We have in Asia as well. And then the Global Hub, which is sort of the umbrella of our organization. And it looks at issues across all the world, really, but it also fills in the gaps that are not covered by the regional hubs. And so that would include Canada, the US, for example, South America, Australia, things like that, other countries that are not, specifically in a regional hub.
Amazing. There's one question. Okay, so candidly, you two are the youngest people that I've interviewed on this podcast so far, which is like great for me. I'm like, ooh, other people near my age doing this kind of work. But my sort of question is like, we are that new generation that is pushing, memory and motion and social transformation, transgenerational trauma forward. How do I want to phrase this question? I know for me, I see a lot in like working with these older women who defined the language that we use and who created that vocabulary. How does that impact the way that you work, given that so many things are happening that go against the vocabulary that we inherited from, our predecessors in this world? So the question makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does.
Okay.
I'll give it a go. For me, I think I feel like a big sense of responsibility. That in the sense that we have so much that has been done before us, that has paved the way for us, but that in the political climate that we are in globally, but also regionally in Europe, there is a rollback on rights and freedoms, and a lot of things that we have taken for granted are not so safe anymore. And I feel that it is, I think it's as a person within the younger activist generation, I think it's my responsibility to make sure that those rights are protected. And if they are taken away or they are stripped back, that we fight to have them back, because of the work that has been done before us. And I really, and also, I think time evolves, so we can readapt certain language to fit modern day life of women and across the world. And that's normal. Also, the previous generations, there's been a continuous adaptation of language and terms to fit what is happening in the everyday life. So I think, it's our responsibility to make sure that things fit and protect the most vulnerable and marginalized within our society.
Firstly, to highlight like how every generation has a responsibility, and our previous generations, they were fighting for something that was important at their time, and now it's our turn. And at their time, like I feel like it's like just this continued loop that we go through. And right now, it's as young people, it's our responsibility to carry that on while we're also healing our own generational trauma. And then For example, like language is so important when it comes to portraying a message because it really does shape the narrative. And I've always been trying to express this view that the way we refer to something, to someone, or to women, or different categories of people, or whatever, it is so important that you're so careful with the term that you're using because it does influence how the wider audience or the public sees you. And not a lot of people have a deeper knowledge about terminologies and how to use it, when to use it. For example, in a lot of news media channels, there are certain terms that are used for certain groups, and it really then, there is this perspective like, okay, this group of people, they're viewed as a threat or they're a security threat or something like that. So, again, while we're like also fighting for our rights and for justice and for the broader good, it's also important to be aware of these terminologies that we're using. And this is also something we do within our organization. We have our own guideline of how do we refer to our colleagues, how do we refer to team members, what terms are we using, because that is essential to the message that we're giving to ourselves and also what we're bringing forth to the audience. So I think that's something we really put a lot of emphasis on, even when we're designing our posts and our communication guidelines. So it's something we do within our work too.
That's great, because I think language and vocabulary is one of the hardest things to get access to, especially when you're, a baby activist and growing up in it. Is you learn so much from social media and from TV, and it's not always correct. I am a TV, I work in the TV industry, and I see the language, and I'm like, that's the incorrect language to use. The language is so important, and that's, partly what we're doing here at this conference is trying to expand that vocabulary for everybody. Where would you recommend people who are just, I called them baby activists, but the people who are coming up and just starting to deprogram or to awake to some of the things, where would you recommend they go to discover this language? Obviously, beside this podcast, but what are some your recommendations of how to start getting into this work?
I would say you can check out our website and our Instagram profiles and our social media profiles. But also, I think it's really important when you are developing your own your own sort of activist profile, that you tailor what you are following on your socials to what you are particularly interested, what speaks to you, you know? So for example, I've done that particularly. So I am very focused on re reproductive justice and gender-based violence, for example. And so I look on Instagram and I see, okay, I can follow the big pages like UN Women and all these other things, or I can also look for activist pages on Instagram. And then slowly I build a network, and through them I can see what they're reposting. And I tailor this little niche algorithm for myself, and that, and then it slowly goes into me, that it becomes part of what I see. And so I think, oh, okay, that's, it's like that for everyone. It's not, but it sort of tricks you into creating your own bubble of things. And then obviously, to you should not hesitate to reach out to these organizations and say, oh, I'm a young person, this is a passion, I'm really passionate about this. Is there any way that I could contribute to your work? Is there something I can do? Or do you have any recommendations? I think a lot of people are really touched when you send them really thoughtful messages. And I think it's also really important. I think even within the younger generation, I'm 28 to give context, and we have we're in a group where we have a mixture of millennials and Gen Z. So we're from anywhere from 30 to 18, 19 years old. And so I really think that it's so important that there is sort of, between different age groups and generations, that there is this like formation of collaboration and solidarity between different groups. And so I think it's really also really beneficial, that you look for mentors, because they can give you a lot of energy and they can spark a lot of, but then you also can teach them things. And I think that's really an important part of feminist work for me personally.
And it's that memory in motion part of it too is memory and I cannot say that word this morning. Transgenerational trauma is not just like parent to child. It's also not trauma. That's not where I want to go with this. But that transgenerational aspect is not just like parent to child. It is mentor to mentee and teaching the next generation and learning from previous generations.
I think, first of all, even us as activists, we do not have the answers to everything. And I feel like when I started my journey, there was so many things that I didn't know, which I learned while working with so many people. In terms of language, it's like the more you read and discover yourself, you will eventually build that vocabulary that is needed to be used. I did a lot of conferences, a lot of workshops, a lot of reading, a lot of policy analysis. And the thing is, like, even if you look at international frameworks, you cannot say that those terminologies are right. You really have to look at those frameworks very critically, because there are certain words and terms in international frameworks that can be really offensive to certain groups of people. So even when it comes to, like, if we talk about migration, this difference between expat and immigrant, or when we think about the other, some of these frameworks refer to us as aliens because we're from another country, so these kind of terms, you as you start analyzing documents and you start, like I said, to follow activists, see what words they're using, you really then develop that vocabulary. But even for me, I feel like there's so much that I don't know that I keep discovering every day. And, like, with the Gen Z trend, there's so many new words and terminologies that keep coming up every, like, I don't know, week. So it's hard to keep up with that. But also, too much exposure to this social media and trends is also not good, because you don't know what is right or wrong. At the end of the day, you really have to fact check. And the best way to do that is you kind of see what language is either hurting a certain group or is affecting them. They don't like being called that term. They don't like being associated with that word. So it's a lot of your own research and a lot of reading documents, books, the best knowledge you will get from the books. So yeah.
We kind of, at the very beginning of our conversation, we started talking about intersectionality. And I keep kind of coming back to that because I think in the US, it probably looks different than in Europe. Intersectionality for us is very much, it is, I mean, the definition probably is the same, but it appears differently. And it's very, black skin versus white skin and creating those black spaces. And I think it was coined in the 80s by a lawyer at UCLA. Of like creating spaces for Black women. And now it means so much more of creating spaces for anybody who's not a certain type. How does that kind of show up in Europe? Because I feel like I probably don't have lived in Europe, but I probably don't even know how it kind of shows up in the different niches of what it is.
Yeah, no, definitely. In fact, there's a lot of debate within scholarly circles often in Europe that there's a hesitation also in the global south to not take a US adopted or coined terms, because you often feel that it's isolated and you don't want to, have a one size fits all term. But I think the beauty about intersectionality is that it can really be it can be applied to many different contexts, and it can mean different things in different wherever you are. Intersectionality, it's something that even at the UN level, for example, the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women encouraged that everyone uses an intersectional approach when looking at discrimination against women, especially when you're looking at also gender-based violence and things like that. But at a European level, I think when you're thinking about intersectionality, you're thinking about race, the legacy of colonialism, legacies of slavery. You're also thinking about migration, refugees, disability, different identities, for example, women coming from the Roma or Sinti community, for example, women, for example, who have experienced war or, have experienced abuse or gender-based violence, reproductive injustice. There are so many ways that it can apply, and I'm sure Mihar has more to adapt, but it's it's a it applies to so many different things.
Yeah, and I guess too, like from a heart in communications, is how do you see that intersectionality coming through in the way that you like put out content and create content and also receive content as like both yourself and maybe the organization?
I think to start with, I never felt that I'm different until I came to Europe. And for me, that was really eye-opening because I was made felt that I'm different. I'm not one of them, right? And then when I started my journey with activism and politics, and we have this really beautiful intersectional family at Politics for Her, I felt very heard and seen. And that's when I realized like it doesn't matter what race you're from, what ethnicity you're from, what nationality you're from, but I felt heard, and that's what really matters to us women of color. Because at the end of the day, our struggles are really the same. The problems that we face here in Europe are also some of the problems in America, where we're fighting for our rights for abortion, or we're literally resisting violence against ourselves. We have the same problems in Asia too. And at the end of the day, if us women start differentiating between women fighting for literally each other's rights, and we're like, no, because white feminism is better and we're better than women in Asia and something, we're then just literally stuck in this war between ourselves, and we're not really contributing to the bigger picture, right? And then when it comes, when we're all really come together at the end of the day, and we're like, it doesn't really matter what skin color you are, but we have the same struggle, and we're gonna fight together for everyone's equal rights. That's when we're really going to achieve something. And even when it comes to portraying our message to online on our audience, we have sometimes we're having Europeans in our team who are creating videos. Sometimes I'm making the video, but we never felt like, oh, okay. There are some topics that I also post content about. Like we had a recent video about hate speech on the Roma community, and I'm not from Europe. I really don't have any personal connections with the community, but that doesn't matter because at the end of the day, we are still trying to raise a voice for the marginalized, and that is the truly the essence of feminism. Like there are certain categories of feminism that really differentiates between this, and I genuinely feel like you really can't be a feminist if you're not an intersectional. That is what I personally believe. And also again with migration, how global migration is rapidly increasing, and we're seeing this cross migration between Asia and Middle East coming into Europe. We really need to make space for different cultures and accepting them for who they are rather than telling them, okay, they don't look like us, they're not European enough, they're not white enough. All of these things are literally distractions from the main bigger message. So at the essence, at the core of it, I really think that intersectionality also brings us together because then we're also sharing our cultures, we're sharing our views, we're sharing different perspectives of how I grew up in Pakistan, and then someone from Italy tells me like how their culture is, and that is really what is going to connect us and make a stronger bridge between different communities and nationalities.
And just jumping off from what Meher said, I really think that my experience from being in politics for her is that we really inspire one another, and also we really see the similarities that our cultures have. Like, at the root of society, there's always patriarchy and heteronormativity and all these other problems that exist. And although they have different shapes or different, in they are in different formats or in different national contexts, they are the same. At the root of it, they are the same issues that we face. And so there's also this, I really like being in a part of an intersectional feminist group that we have solidarity with each other, and we think, okay, how can we learn from each other? How can we improve this? How can we fight and make sure that we don't face these issues in 10 years' time, 5 years' time, 30 years' time? It's a long fight. That I've learned for sure. But yeah, I don't know. It's also creating of a sisterhood that is just, it's really amazing.
And like my like question that I have in my brain is like, how do I apply for a job at Politics for Her? How do I go there? That sounds amazing to be surrounded by women who like all have the same passions as you. And that's I mean the sisterhood part of it I think is important too is not we both talked about this is like you can't fight the women you're fighting with because then you like one voice, many voices is stronger than one, but also if there's inner fighting, then it's hard to make movement. And I know here in the States, when we went through our whole like abolition and women's rights, it was white women and then black women supporting white women, assuming they'd get that res support and then not. And I've seen, we're still in that same trend of like, we're only doing this for us, but they're a different skin color, or they're a different religion, so they aren't important, which is just heartbreaking. And it's building that sisterhood is really important. I know I do it just in my own life, as I have like one man friend and then several women friend, and we bully him for reparations. In building that kind of like sisterhood that you guys have in your organization, and I'm assuming you build it also in the work that you do outside of your organization. How do you guys how do you not get dragged down by just the crappiness of the world? Like, how do you guys support each other, like mentally, like ha and emotionally? How does that kind of like play and come through in your life?
Well, we really make sure that we encourage everyone to take breaks. You can't carry all the weight of the world alone, and not all the time. It's unrealistic. I think the best, I think one of the most important lessons I've learned about activism and feminism in general is that the lesson up in the airplane when they tell you that you should take the gas mask first before you help others. I think you can apply that to feminism and activism as well. And there are times when you can't handle the news, and that's okay. Take a few days off, and then when you feel safe and in a better state of mind, you can go back to it. No one is going to judge you. No one is going to hurt you. No one is, you have to look out for yourself. I think that is very important. And so we like to give, everyone in our group that space. And we also, have mechanisms in place where if someone is going, actually, I find this topic really triggering, or I find this really upsetting, I don't know if I can handle it today or in this week, someone else will say, okay, I can step in and I can look out for each, I can look out for you, and we can, I'll take the load off you. Everyone has that, has that in their lives, because we all have different experiences, and that's completely valid. Just because you can't one day doesn't mean you can't the next or in another a month's time. And yeah, personally, for me, I consume the news in a constructive way. I don't go into scrolling loops. where I spend hours at a time looking at everything that is going wrong in the world. Unfortunately, I wish it was different, but it's not. But I spend some time, maybe in the morning or in the evening, and then I don't look at the news, or I don't go on Twitter. I don't go, and then maybe I'll have a look at social media at what another part of the day. And then I also hear things from my friends, from my sister's friend, politics for her, other activist groups, and you will be in the loop. You will find out. If something is really important or life-shattering, you will find out about it, even if you are not the first one to know about it on Twitter or X or one of those other platforms. So yeah.
Downtime is important, very important. I know I take a day off, like Saturdays, I stare at a wall. That's my goal on Saturdays, to stare at a wall. And my dad does not understand my ability to just sit and stare at a wall for 8 hours. Meher, how do you take care of yourself?
Again, I love this question. The power of female friendships and sisterhood, it's amazing. It's the best thing that I have realized over these past few years, how women come together to heal each other. And genuinely, the word that we're the news that we see nowadays, such terrible, terrible news that we come across. And I think for the comms team, this is something that I also really struggle with is sometimes we, because I'm a huge empath and I take things very, very at my heart. And I think a lot of activists, we are really empaths and the news really gets to us. And my experience with the comms team when we were designing some videos and reels and posts, there were some really, really heavy topics. And I'm sure it's the same for the research team and for the policy team because they have to really dig into it deeper. But when we're designing these and I would send a message in the group. I'm like, okay, here's the post for this topic. And it was really, really heavy for me, and usually everyone in the group's like they send their message and it's like we have this kind of solidarity, like this understanding. We were creating reels for Palestine as well, and we had to go through so many pictures of dead children. And for me, that was just like while we're making content to get our message across, it's also really shattering to see that. And sometimes being part of the comms team there, when we're just overburdened with it, I would hit a creative block, and I would tell the team that I can't design right now. I'm in a creative block, and I need to take this time to first get out of this block. And how to do that is you create some boundaries. Also, I loved Eileen's metaphor of like you have to wear your own oxygen mask first, and that's also part of our own trauma healing because we're not only carrying the weight and the burden of the world, but we're also healing our own trauma from past generations. So sometimes it's really good to have hobbies that are away from the news. It's okay to. There's some guilt that comes with it, but it's okay. You need to kind of, be away from it. Do your painting, do your arts, do your writing, do your journaling. Go on a walk, take your downtime, stare at a wall, if that's what it is, and then you come back to it and you feel more energized. And the best part about it is that you're not alone in this fight. That's what keeps the whole team together. Sometimes someone's going to send a message, oh, this is happening in the referendum in Italy. And we're all like, oh my God, not again. What world are we living in? So we have this kind of humor also within the group. And that really also, keeps us together at the end of the day. So that's just, I think, this bond that we've all created. And we really are also on the same wavelength when it comes to this.
How do I get in the group chat is my question. But that's, you talked about humor, and I feel like that's something that a lot of people don't realize is such an important part of activism, is like being able to like hold, oh God, I'm gonna do the wicked thing, to hold space for the horrible things that are happening in the world, like Palestine and Ukraine and in Sudan and the DRC and everything, but to also be able to to find laughter, because laughter is a balm. I just took a Shakespeare class. I just finished my master's and I took a Shakespeare class, and we had entire conversations about you have to be able to laugh in order to heal, even though tragedy is happening. So hearing that's coming from like an organization level of like, no, we laugh and we try to find the humor in things is like so touching. Because I feel like I get so, especially when I'm in the doom scrolling of it all, I just can't laugh at a certain point. And then I'll reach out to one of my girlfriends and she'll crack a joke and then we'll cry and then we'll laugh.
And also a fun thing we do, we have regular meetings for the hub where we give each other updates and we see how we're doing. And apart from doing check-ins, we give space for people to do regular check-ins. We also have make dedicate 10, 20 minutes to play fun games where we can laugh and get to know each other and just completely relax. Think about something completely different. So, like for example, we'll play a game where we have got different emojis which represent a film or a TV or a book series, and we're all guessing, and it's just completely distracts you from everything that is happening and what that you've seen, and we're just talking about different things that don't apply to anything that we're dealing with in our everyday lives, and it's just so much fun. So yeah.
Oh my gosh, it sounds
I just
amazing.
want to quickly add to that. Also within our hubs, we always have different sessions going on. Like the global hub sometimes have meditation May, so that other hubs can join in. Sometimes we just have internal hub sessions that are just for us to get to know each other and relax and really, share the burden together. Again, like you're not supposed to carry all this burden in the world alone. It's just not humanly possible, and that's what we're there for each other to come together and share it. Also in May, sometimes some hubs take the mental health month off. For us, it's I think probably August in 2 weeks. So we do have the downtime, and then we have some really busy periods, and then we're back to like the grinding and our full activist mode, and then we have to kind of, go with the flow with the basically.
Something kind of came up too during that conversation is like this, like the idea of like creativity and being creative in the work and outside of the work. I just graduated with my master's in depth psychology and creativity. So it's very much at the forefront of my mind of how does, creativity come into play? Because it is important. Creativity is human nature. So like how do you weave that into your work? How does it come up naturally? And like how are you using creativity in your own healing work?
It's a really good question. For me, I've always been a creative person. I think Eileen can second to that. Whenever we have meetings and I have like so many thoughts, I'm like, oh, we could do this, we could do that, we can do this, and then we can design that. So that's just my brain. I have a lot of creative ideas that comes up. But also for inspiration, then I'm also sometimes going to a lot of art exhibitions, doing a lot of checking a lot of other organizations, what they're up to, keeping up with the trends in social media and everything. So I think it's a lot of that. But then I also paint a lot. I like to draw. So these are just some of my personal hobbies that kind of adds into the creativity. But the most funny thing is that when I started Politics for Her, I applied for the policy team because I'm really good at writing. And at that time, our co-director, at that time, she was like, no, you're going to be in communications team. And at that time, I swear, I had no knowledge of how Canva works, how the designs work and the formatting. And I'm like, but I can't do this. I don't know anything about the comms team. And she's like, you'll be fine. And I swear that, like, really taking that step, something that I was so unsure of, I didn't know how to do it, and I learned it. That also really helped me kind of hone my creativity, because then I got an outlet to express my views. So when it comes to whenever we have the research and we have to design the poster, and I'm like, okay, this is gonna look really nice. These colors are gonna look great. This font size. So it really comes with the practice as well. And I would say, like, for people who want to explore their creativity, just go ahead and do it. It does not have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be. Art's not meant to be perfect. That's why it's art. If we start kind of grading and art, saying art needs to be perfect, that just removes the whole point of it. So exploring your creativity, being in nature, that's something I love doing. Because where else can you find inspiration for creativity if not in nature? Like, it's the most beautiful thing, like, so yeah, for me it was a mix of all of these different things and my ADHD brain, which keeps bringing like so many thoughts. So I'm going to pass it on to Eileen now.
First of all, I have to say that we appreciate everything that the comms team does, and really, Mahar has exceeded the expectations and has become an excellent creative person. So I'm so glad that she took that advice from our very wise former co-director of Politics for Her Europe. For me, I approach creativity slightly differently. I am not a naturally artistic person, let's say. I enjoyed, as a kid, I enjoyed drawing, but it was never something that I said I was particularly good at, for example. So I see creativity in different ways. So I enjoy reading a lot, and particularly fiction. So not in the real world, but different alternative outside, something outside of the realm of what's happening in our world. And I really take, it's like a balm for me to, in the evening, like before I go to bed, or in the weekend, to just sit down and go into another world, and explore the different facets of a story or things like that. For me, that is really helpful. I've always loved to read, and so for me, that's something I like to do. And I think also, there are so many different ways that you can be creative. I think it's also about how you approach what you're reading, like even in the activism itself, like how are you approaching a problem? And for me, it's about listening to different people's way of approaching activism and seeing how, if I apply that mechanism or that tool, how that works out for me. And I find often that it opens new possibilities and it opens up new avenues that I hadn't thought about before. And to listen to different perspectives. And I think I learned that really well last year when I was involved in a campaign that was called End Gender Apartheid in Afghanistan. And first of all, we were in collaboration with Afghanistani women who were in the diaspora in Europe, and they were really determined to call for the recognition of gender apartheid as a crime against humanity. And so we were all involved in that campaign, and I was involved. Also, I'm not naturally a communication person, but I together with another friend of mine in Politics for Her, we took on the role of promoting our campaign on social media, and we were posting every day over the summer period. And we were thinking of different ways, we were exploring TikTok themes, for example, and we're like, okay, how can we use this for the campaign, or listening to certain clips of a song and going, this song is really, we can use this to apply it to another context and things like that. So I think there are so many different ways. And also when you feel particularly that you're, in a block, or that you're feeling particularly low, maybe, or you're being triggered by something, I think it really helps to, even if you just take a pen, and paper, and you start coloring circles or whatever you want to do, I think it can really help to unlock a lot of the trauma or hurt and feelings that you're feeling. And it's just an outlet for you to let go of some of that. And I think that it's really important when you're healing from different experiences and also generational trauma, that you take time to heal and process these things. And I think creativity, being outside, taking in fresh air, for me also being creative is, I really enjoy making new recipes. So I just spend a few hours in a kitchen and then enjoy the food afterwards, hopefully with some company, nice company. That also is a really good way for me to think about something else, and it unlocks a lot of things that are in my brain, and it helps me process them.
It's amazing. That is, I have a friend who's a chef who's also getting her degree in depth psychology, and it's become like a whole new creative outlet of how can I create a recipe that helps me unlock this part of my brain or like helps me heal from this trauma. And she's designed entire courses about like, this is my relationship with my mother, and it's a three-course meal. But that is like you both kind of touched on it as like art. In activism is really important, just as an act of being creative is a form of activism. I've been, like in my own life, I've been very much diving into like the craft work of like quilting or woodworking and like how that's in itself like a form of activism, just because it's doing something with your hands and it helps regulate your nervous system. Reading helps regulate your nervous system and drawing just circles is all part of that. Because when you're regulated, you have more space to be able to take up arms so that other people can go and regulate themselves and go and take those breaks. And so that's amazing. Like it's so amazing to hear that like you both are it seems like very balanced in holding this activism piece and also, you know, taking care of yourself, which is a form of activism. And it sounds like this is a great organization in encouraging that, which is so touching and heartwarming for me. And again, how do I become a part of this?
I would just like to say that I appear balanced. Most of the time I am, but it's ebbs and flows. Like everyone, we all have our moments. And right now I'm in a great space. Other times I'm in a less balanced space, and that's okay as well. It's about how you pick yourself up. It's not about what the low you're feeling. It's part of life. Certain things sometimes will just hit you, maybe when you're not expecting it, and you think, oh, I was so balanced. I was doing everything right. I was working out. I was looking after my mental health. I was, I had everything calibrated, and then something happens and you're triggered or something, and you go, oh, I can't believe that. Don't go into that cycle of judging yourself and being hard on yourself. It's okay. Just as you have gone through this, you can get through it again, and you will recalibrate and also quit more much more quickly than you expect. Once you have recalibrated once, it's much easier to do it again. But I just want to make sure that people don't feel judged, or I don't know. Yeah.
That's important. I say this going like I'm like in the middle of going from a low to a high. So I'm like, yeah, that is important. I can build myself up again. You know, what is there something we didn't talk about that you guys want to touch on for politics for her, for yourself, and kind of the, you know, in the vein of the conversations we've been having? Is there anything you have left to say that you want people to hear?
I suppose the one angle that we maybe didn't explore as much is that we've focused a lot on our internal community and the posts that we make, but we are slowly trying to expand into an outward community as well and create a safe space for other young women and feminist activists. And so, for example, we had our A few months ago, we had our first workshop about digital activism and how we keep our safe spaces, and it was to the public, and it was really reaffirming. And so it was a balm to the soul, honestly, that experience, because we were all just talking about different strategies on how to cope with certain situations, what to do when you feel that you can't speak up, and how you can address these things, how to keep yourself safe online, for example. And it was just so touching. Also, we had some men in the group as well who gave their perspective about what, and I think that's so important when we're talking about feminism and fighting for gender equality. And dealing with gender-based violence is that we need men to be part of the conversation, and we need them to be activists and intersectional feminists as well. And because a lot of these things come down to culture, and norms that we have that have been passed down through generations, and so we need men as well to change the conversation out that's happening around them, with other men, to sort of to critique certain comments or things they are saying and say, no, that's not right. And so I think solidarity between different groups is such important, and also through age, I think it's really, really positive. I think, for example, the collaboration we have with Colo is the fact that we have respect from an older generation who maybe don't feel as comfortable with digital activism, but have years of experience in other forms of activism. And so it's meeting together and saying we can create a space for ourselves that and share knowledge between ourselves and have this sort of space across different countries, across different ages, across different, all different types of identity. And I think that really is so reaffirming, because I think often you feel very isolated when you're being an activist. And so when you feel that you have a community, it really, yeah, it gives you the, I don't know, you're it feels that you have people standing by you, and it's really important, I think.
Yeah, I would just like to touch on Eileen's point about how we need to come together and shift the narrative. It's not women against men. I've heard men be like, oh, you're one of those feminist activists, and I'm like, yeah, I am. What is wrong with that? Aren't you a feminist? Like, why are we even in the same room if you're not supporting women's rights too? So that is the first thing that needs to be done, that women are already fighting for their rights from centuries. Men really need to start being part of this conversation, because you need to teach the younger boys also how to respect women, how to protect their rights, how to be part of this. It's really, again, about coming together as a society, which I was also expressing earlier, like this differentiation between race and nationality and gender and all of this, it's all just distractions. We, at the end of the day, we're really fighting for the bigger picture, which is everyone having a safe space, a safe home to live in, equal rights to work in, equal opportunities to be participate in. And that's how you can really create a more constructive society that really prospers. Even from giving my experience from countries that are really, really backward in their rights, like Pakistan, there's so much gap between men how they perceive women. So it's really, men need to start being part of this conversation. And I love this new direction that Politics for Europe has taken, because we were really focusing on just the women perspective, but very recently we were like, okay, hold on. We kind of need to change the narrative and start bringing the message out to the men there, because that is also really important. And then to end this part of my thought process, it's the idea of you learn from your elders, and just like what we're doing here, like older women who are not very tech savvy and who don't know how the communications work, but they have so much experience, they have so much knowledge, and they're there to guide you, and we're all ready to receive the guidance. And this is what I'd also like to tell the younger people than us, that the opportunities there are they're for you. Like, and it's much easier for us to participate in these organizations, these conversations. It's just one click away, it's one Google search away. So really try to involve yourself in the community you're living in. Try to get to know people that you don't know where they're from. Go and say hi to the person who looks different. It might really, that one conversation will really change your perspective and your view on life, because Sometimes I see that people or want to stay within their group. Okay, yeah, I'm just gonna, even in schools, you know, in middle school, high school, universities, you would want to, it's very natural, you would want to stay with the group that you're from. Okay, I'm just gonna stick with the Americans, I'm just gonna stick with the Belgians, and I'm not gonna go talk to that girl who's from India, I'm not gonna go talk to that boy who's from Bangladesh. But no, like, really, put yourself out of that comfort zone. You're going to expand your knowledge. You're going to learn so much, and that is exactly how we're going to create that bridge, by connecting with different cultures, by connecting with different people from different backgrounds. And this is really, I would really emphasize this on the younger people. It's something I also did. I put myself out of the comfort zone, and all the opportunities that came with it, all the people I've met, all the connections I've made, you know, and the sisterhood, even at Politics for Her, it's, we're not just like a team that works on different projects. We're like friends, because whenever we're visiting different countries, you know, someone's like, oh, are you visiting Milan? We should meet up. Or I even met with two of our former team members and the comms. Go ahead. So it's also like a friendship, you know, and these friendships are really going to stay with you. So that would be my thought process for the older and for the younger.
Yeah, and just the community is part of it, and you know, both of you brought up is like we need men in the community, and that is, I mean, that is accurate. Unfortunately, people listen to men a little bit more than they listen to women, and so having those voices is so important. And I consider myself lucky to like have those voices in my life, having like men, but I know there's so many people that don't have that access, and so you know. I think it's great that you guys are bringing that in and being like, yes, this is a thing that needs to happen. Because I think a lot of, I know at least in America, a lot of my like very hardcore feminist friends, it's like it becomes anti-man at some point. And then when you're like, well, but he's also doing work that's kind of important, it becomes a whole nother topic that distracts from the real issues.
Definitely. And I think it's really counterproductive at a certain point to exclude categories of people from a conversation. And it's really surprising, actually, when you start talking to different to men, for example, it's like their eyes are opened when you mention certain experiences that you've had as a woman, even with friends, or like, you know, my own father, or, you know, different contexts. You know, they go, is this really what you experience? Is this what it's like for you? And I go, yeah, this is what we deal with every day. And this is why we're fighting to change this, because it's not acceptable. And it's really, you know, some say that you shouldn't carry the burden of having to explain things to some people. But I do think that sometimes if it's not too much of a burden for you personally, you know, you don't have to be very descriptive or vivid with what your experiences are, but just a small example, just to demonstrate why a certain form of language is particularly harmful. It doesn't take, you know, it can really change a perspective, and then you have an ally, and you maybe they'll say, oh, next time one of my friends or someone I know around me makes such an inappropriate comment, I will say something. And then it'll hopefully trigger a change in culture. And so I think it's so important.
Yeah. And all, I mean, all the conversations are important too. Again, like with the men, cross-cultural, I need coffee. Cross-cultural conversations are so important too, 'cause I work, I'm a producer of a documentary series where we go around the world and we create these, we go and talk to these communities of women. And for me, coming from like, I call myself, I'm from Butter Europe because I'm Icelandic and Scottish, and it does not get pastier and whiter than Icelandic and Scottish. And so going into like these different interviews with Greek women, I was speaking to, who was I speaking to last week? Speaking to an Afghani woman and like having these conversations, like I learned so much more in those conversations than I do with my friend who's also a white American who grew up in California. So both of those points I feel like are so important to just like reiterate so many times. It's like go have the conversation, because if you don't have the conversation, then nothing's going to change. And on that note, my last sort of question for you is how can we find you guys? How can we find Politics for Her? What other, things are coming up for you guys in the organization that we can invite our audiences to be a part of?
All right. We have some really exciting projects coming up. We'll start with we have a podcast series that's actually about the same topic that we're doing. Maybe I will explain this more, but it's also about targeting the men's narrative and the manosphere and the dark romance, if I'm right. So these are some really important conversations that we're having. We're kind of in the process of creating these podcasts, recording them, designing them. So they will be out very soon. That's the series we're working on. Another really important series that I don't want to give too much information about, but it's also about we've been planning it for a really, really long time. So we're working on our migration project that we'll be talking about in the coming months. We're basically going to be analyzing the migration patterns within Europe. And then we also have, like, you can follow us on our LinkedIn, you can follow us on our Instagram pages. If you're interested in different hubs or the global hub or the Europe hub, you can just follow our on our Instagram, because we're updating our page almost very just every day almost. And we also have various conferences and workshops that we do every once in a while. Right now, I think the Global Hub is doing an or already did an Arts for Her session that was really cool, where a lot of people were invited to submit their art to the organization that we then posted. So kind of like art as a way of activism and feminist voice, which I think was a really amazing project. Other than that, we also have policy statements that we put out. So we have one coming up pretty much this week. It's about immigration in Sweden. So every now and then we also have policy statements. So we're analyzing different policy frameworks of countries. That's something if you're interested in. I can go on and on because we have really, really, really cool ideas. We also did for the Europe Hub, we did an online gender-based violence policy brief. We had a workshop about it, but we have put it on our website. So if you want more information, go on our website. You will find everything there, all the policy statements, all the articles that we write, all the comms work we do, all the podcasts. You will find everything there. So I really encourage you guys to go through that. And if then there are any questions that you have, feel free to message us on our Instagram. We're very responsive. You can send us a message on LinkedIn. You can send us an email. That is the best way to get in contact with us. Yeah.
We're very excited about this new podcast series that we have. Our podcast is called Sisterhood Chronicles, and you can find it on Spotify. And it's called Sisterhood Chronicles because it's about the different experiences that women have in Europe, like across an intersectional lens. And in for the past few months, we have been working on this new series, looking at the rise of a manosphere, and also these influencers like Andrew Tate and these far-right figures, and how what we can do to combat it and its effect on women, and AI and technology, and how it intersects with gender-based violence. But also we want to sort of create a toolkit at the end for guardians, parents, uncles, aunts, family members, teachers, on how to speak with young boys about how to approach these topics and how to apply a critical lens when they come across these things across their feed, and why it's very problematic and really dangerous, actually. And it can really lead to very dangerous violence against women. There are every day there's new articles and posts saying that a boy was inspired to cause violence perpetrate an act of violence because of what he saw on the internet and things like that. So it's something we really want to tackle, and we will be talking to experts who ha tackle these things head on. And we also are going to have a survey where we talk to men about the algorithm they see on their pages, because it's completely different to what a woman is going to see on her page, and how they can apply a critical lens to what they're seeing and viewing, and change their habits slowly by through education and learning together. So yeah, first episode should be coming out in September. So if you type Sisterhood Chronicles on Spotify, you will find it, and we will share it as well on our Instagram and our LinkedIn.
I can't wait to listen. You already have your first, you probably have many subscribers already, but you have your first subscriber.
Thank you.
I'm excited to listen to that, and I already know the seven different men in my life that will be getting links to this podcast.
That's the idea.
Thank you everyone again for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed this conversation, and I can't wait for the many more that are coming out in the coming weeks. This is your last chance if you want to join us remotely for the Memory in Motion conference that's taking place August 6th through 9th. Please check out the link in our description if you want to join via Zoom.